How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
I feel like as healthcare providers, we need to be our best examples of who we are. And we're all different, and we all are given different genetics. So it's not about being the same size, shape, color, whatever. It's not that. Are you your best version of yourself? I try to empower people to say, you must put yourself first. It's not selfish to make choices for yourself, because when you're at your best, then you can serve more. Mental wellness is really, where are you in your brain state? And a lot of that is the self-awareness. How am I today? Am I angry today? Am I sad today? Am I irritated? And then why, right? And then we can put these practices into place.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists. This is episode number 189. My name is Andrew.
Good day, y'all. My name is Michelle.
I knew you were going to do it. We talked about you not doing that. We are in Brisbane, Australia, everyone, and we just attended the International Federation of Dental Hygienists Symposium.
Yep.
And it was fantastic.
Very different.
Very different.
But not. So you're there for dental hygiene, you're learning, there's an exhibit, you have breakout courses, all that's the same. But the level of thinking, I think that everyone
it's
is
geared differently.
Yeah, it is. It's more of a cerebral type of meeting where, yeah, you're learning maybe the basics, but you're also learning how to think and treat people as individuals. And it's not a recipe, like we continue to say over and over and over again, but it's been great.
And what drives that probably at this meeting more than other meetings, I think, is the participants are, you know, thought leaders from their individual countries that are representing their countries in this International Federation of Dental Hygienists, and that we're all here for the same purpose, and that's just to promote health and promote prevention. So, but yeah, so fantastic.
Great.
Though. Fantastic.
Great.
Meeting. We love Brisbane.
Yes.
The weather has been phenomenal.
Their winter, well, we're going into spring, so it's like we're coming out of their technical winter, but still it's very mild and just beautiful. Andrew and I continue to say that we would absolutely move here.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Just give us full-time jobs and
with American dollars.
Yeah, with American dollars.
Our dollar.
We want our salary
still. Long way here. But everyone's really nice.
Very inclusive. They'll chat you up.
Yep. It's been great.
Uber drivers even have been not creepy nice, but nice,
right?
Which has been nice.
Very, very good. And we have amazing listeners that we got to meet while we were here.
We mistakenly didn't write down the list of all of them. And so we are very sorry that we are going to forget some people. Can I read you? Okay, I want to do this thing because, so Leah Hobbs, we met Leah. We have a podcast episode coming out with her very soon, and Kelsey, who's going to be her new co-host. Sorry, we're probably breaking the news too early, but they're going to have a podcast that's going to be amazing.
This is
funny.
How we make them accountable.
Did you ever, by the way, do the...
Yes, I did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, that's how we make them accountable. Sorry, I just reliving that. That's right. This is, if we force them to do that, then they're going to do it. So Lee and I have been talking a little bit kind of on Facebook Messenger. And last night, I was kind of just joking around about like how much I would love to live here because it's pretty amazing.
I'm loving all of it.
But then I asked her just a simple question. Are there deadly animals out where you live? Because she lives outside of the city limits of Brisbane a little bit. And her first answer was no. And so then I was like,
just lies,
it's
Leah.
Interesting, Leah, because most Americans, like we always see like the top 20 deadliest animals and like 18 of the 20 are in Australia. It's very rude. And so she's like, well, we do have some lizards and stuff that are kind of, you know, mild or whatever. Oh, and by the way, we have seen brown snakes on our walks here. They will kill you, was her response. And I said, okay, just the one then. And she says, well, our neighbors two doors down are currently renovating and found this python in their walls a couple of weeks ago and showed me that picture. So that was another one. And then we started talking about some other ones. And she said, oh, yeah. Oh, and she sent me a picture of another snake from the Brisbane snake catcher who caught a snake and then released it back into the bush. And she's like, it's totally safe now. It's back in the bush. I'm like, but it does. Are you telling me it doesn't have GPS, some sort of radar to be able to find its way back?
Nope. So that is the downside to Australia. Yeah.
And also our newfound friends lie to us right into our faces and say no when there's actually lots of reasons. So, yeah. So, I mean, we hung out with Leah a little bit and Kelsey, and that was really, really fun. Mm-hmm.
And you're going to hear a podcast that's going to kind of break down a little bit of what being a hygienist or a oral health therapist looks in Australia, because it's a little slightly different. But I gotta say, like, as an American, we kind of whine and cry about our structure, but Australian system and the association that keeps them down, it's kind of rough too.
I mean, I feel like we all have a system that we're trying to
fight against a little bit.
And until we have autonomy and the right leaders in place, in which I know that's always kind of the problem, but you know.
So yesterday or last night, we were at a dinner and for EMS. And thank you for feeding us and educating us and giving me the wine. And Tim Ives, who you'll hear on the podcast too, you have heard on the podcast before, he asked me what I got from this meeting. So I'm going to ask you, you can sit and think on it while I can tell you mine. But mine was a lot of validating or confirming and maybe protocols or research that I've already been doing or have understood. It was just kind of like, okay, I feel good that's what we're hearing on a global level. And also taught me how to maybe read, because I took more research, like critical appraisal courses, I think, than you did, but just how to maybe look at it from a different perspective or better understand what the research is trying to tell me versus, and I don't think I've ever taken it at face value. I think I've had some really great people to help guide me in that, but it was just a nice way to, handle current future systematic reviews and meta-analysis and the things that are coming out like network meta-analyses. And I just found that really great and interesting.
Surprise, surprise. Your answer is boring. All of our listeners are asleep now. So great. For me, it sounds really stupid and kind of a little bit trite, I think, but I've never been in an environment as a hygienist that has been promoting prevention, which is so dumb to really think about and really like acknowledge out loud. But when I'm sitting here and we're speaking with some of the Australian hygienists and what they're trying to promote and what they're trying to do, and when they're just so thankful, where I know you have your thing about samples being given out, but they're so thankful for the samples that they get to then put into the hands of their patients because they really don't have it. You know, that kind of level of oral health promotion and prevention promotion is something that I think that I forget a lot in what I'm doing. I'm working with my patients who have insurance, who have the ability to come see me every however 3, 4, 6, 12 months for their maintenance. And so I think that was an interesting like reminder of there are so many other places in the world that are not progressed to where we are, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's actually kind of a better thing almost.
Yeah, because we don't have, I know we are prevention specialists, but we don't prevent anything. We are surgical technique people. We are scalar to tooth. We are polishing. We are
just a lot of treatment,
a lot of therapy,
and a lot of treatment.
And until the day comes that we have more focus on the educational component of the appointment versus the actual treatment component, I don't think I would ever call us prevention specialists, because we're really, and honestly, most people get, and one of the comments in Anne's course, she brought up, how often do we talk about high fluoride toothpaste, or, you know, make sure you get this with the potassium nitrate so for your sensitivity, and then we hand them off the free crap that we always get, and the, how conflicting that message is to our patient, which is something I complain about all the time, but it's happens every day over and over in our practices. So,
I guess our big takeaway is everyone needs to really come to exactly buddy that we didn't even rehearse that one. But yes, you need to be going to the meetings. You need to be listening to podcasts, spreading the message about podcasts for right now. If you guys can't make it to all the meetings, prioritize the meetings. Yes, it does seem like this big glamorous lifestyle that Michelle and I get to, you know, come to Australia and we went to Europario and we do all these different things. And by the way, I think we're going to come back to Australia next year too for another conference. But it's really important that you have you broaden your perspective of what you're doing by coming to these meetings.
Yeah, because we do feel that it is, now that we have a following, now that we have the ability and have a voice to deliver content to you guys, that it's not just from the American perspective. It's not just from Washington State, South Carolina State, whatever it is, my implant world, your restorative world, that it's a global perspective, and it's going to be able to move us as humans forward, not just as Americans or East Coasters or Perio or whatever. Yeah.
And so I think we also need to acknowledge and thank the International Federation of Dental Hygienists for allowing us to come to that meeting.
Yes.
They allowed us to come in as guests and kind of record on location, and they gave us passes to do all of that. One other thing we didn't mention was the tea time break.
Oh, Andrew did love a little high tea.
It was a 45-minute break between sessions where you have coffee, tea, and cakes.
And cookies and biscuits.
In the exhibit hall floor.
Yes.
And then also the lunches and the dinners.
And it was a very come sit, eat, have a good meal.
Slow paced.
Yes. Yes,
like,
it was.
Enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Hours that we could do this together over the day, you know.
I also appreciated that they had a coffee machine ready to go at all times on the exhibit hall floor.
Yeah.
So, and we're learning Australian.
Oh, wait till that episode comes out. I'm going to try not to bleep all of the words. So quick shout out to Sylvia also. It was, again, I'm really sorry that I make things awkward for everyone when they're like, hey, do you have a podcast? I'm like, I just don't. It's so weird being recognized for that kind of thing. I'll get better about it, everyone. Just trust me. And then all the Americans that we saw. And then also we saw Carmen Lanaway again,
yes,
which is fantastic. We saw Siobhan Healy. She came, surprised everyone. That was really fun. Of course, we saw the ADHA, Matt and Ann, and we saw Tammy Filipiak. Trisha O'Hare was here. I think Matt was saying something that there was, I mean, was it 70-something Americans?
85, I think.
Americans?
Yeah.
A ton of Americans were here, so we were well represented.
And we met an amazing team at Dr. Fitz's office from Canada last night. They were awesome. And really, we feed off of these meetings. We really do. And we talk about networking, but if you don't do it and you're not in it and you're not finding your like-minded people, even though I think sometimes we get a little too like-minded and we don't challenge ourselves, but finding those people who are going to support you and push you. And when you're not the smartest person in the room and you're able to learn from everyone, it's such a fuel. And we really started this podcast so that we could prevent the burnout, the professional frustration, as a reminder why you do what you do for your patient population. And we are just filled at these meetings with all of that.
One last shout out, Sheree Bishop. We ran into them at the ramen shop.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry. I forgot her friend's name, and I'm the worst about that. But, shout out to you guys.
Yes.
Thank you for being cool about all of that.
Everyone was great.
Everyone was great. And so this episode,
and I just say that this episode is with Kelly Jakes, who was here that I never saw.
Right. Well, she was here. She was representing the United States. So it was kind of an important big deal.
I just never saw her.
Well, yeah. So Funny enough, though, this is recorded at another conference at ADHA. So comes full circle here.
Mm-hmm. So enjoy this episode about menopause with Kelly Jakes.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine.
We are actually very excited to have you on because a year ago we were supposed to have you, I believe, and then my flight got delayed.
Right.
Just never made it on. So we want to welcome Kelly Jakes.
Yes.
Yes.
My full name is Kelly Swanson Jakes. That's, you know, my Thanks. Legal name. That's the name that my dental hygiene license is in. But it's just so much easier to go with Kelly Jakes now.
Oh, well, so we'll go with the whole thing. That's your name. That's your name. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about you and who you are and your journey.
First and foremost, it's a tale of two hygienists. So I like to let the audience know I am a dental hygienist. I live in the great state of Oregon. And I received a Bachelor of Science Dental Hygiene in way back in the 90s. Probably some of our listeners weren't even born yet. But
oh, my God. I can't even take that.
I was a non-traditional student. I didn't even take my first college course till I was 30 years old.
Oh, okay.
So part of my journey is, you know, to empower others that it's never too late to start on a goal. So yeah, I spent my 20s. I actually was one of those young moms. So I had two babies in my 20s. And at 30 years old, I kind of woke up and said, hey, wait a minute. I would like to do something more with my life. I started at a community college. I did not even know what I wanted to pursue.
Mm.
I just knew I wanted a good job. Right. So I thought, well, it must be medical or dental. I never had an aspiration to be a nurse, but I started taking pre-nursing because I did not know what else to do. And I just wanted to get started.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, kind of a great message for anyone. You have to be moving to make change in your life. Right.
And that's a good point. Yes.
Know the end, but mm-hmm. you have to start taking
those first steps.
Yeah. So I went to college and like within the first year of all these prereq courses with pre-nursing students, I also met a whole group of pre-dental hygiene students because we all have the same science background.
Yes.
And as soon as I found these people who were pre-dental hygiene, it was like, oh my gosh.
That's where it. I need to be.
I didn't even realize.
Yeah.
The light bulb went off.
Yeah, it went off. It's like, that's what I'm going to do. And so that's what I pursued. Now, it took me 5 years to get the bachelor's because, like I say, I was a working mom. I had little babies, I had lots of responsibilities. So it took me 3 years at the community college level, and then I bumped up to Oregon Health Sciences University for the last 2 years. So first and foremost, I'm a dental hygienist.
Yes. Do you still introduce yourself as a dental hygienist? Because I've transitioned slightly out of the clinic. I'm there one day a week. But when people ask me, like, what do you do? I'm like, I'm a dental hygienist. And my friend's like, you are not. I'm like, yes, I am. I am always a dental hygienist.
That's exactly how I feel. I haven't practiced clinically for about 10 years. Like, I don't, mm-hmm. I no longer do clinical dental hygiene. In fact, I would have to take some kind of remedial learning, you know.
You're like 11, 12. Okay, yeah, I got it.
But that's, I think, the beauty of the profession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We all start in clinical. We all have that foundation mm-hmm. together. We all know it. We know the verbiage. We know the words. We know, you know, patient care. And yet, so many hygienists, mm-hmm. we can keep growing and learning and changing and be other things. But yes, I do tell people, at least I say my first degree mm-hmm. is in dental hygiene.
Yeah, because that's good.
I'm speaking in other worlds as well. Mm-hmm. That's not only oral health. And so they want to know, well, why are you talking about some science-based issue?
Okay.
Well, it's because I have a science-based background in my education. So I'm proud to be a dental hygienist.
Absolutely. So let's talk about those other science-based areas that you're speaking in. So what are you doing now in the last 10 years that you're not working clinically?
Well, that's a great question. I went back to get a master's degree. I got that, received that in 07. And I went back because I had been practicing clinically for about 10 years. And I was like, I want to do something more. So again, that desire to do something more. And, you know, as a dental hygienist, as in many professions, we go to continuing education courses and we have to have so much education every couple of years to re-up our licensure. So I would go to all these CEs and, you know, to be honest, some of them were like very boring.
Say, yeah,
right. They didn't keep my interest. It's like, I know the science is important.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of updates,
but yeah, I mean, how many lectures have we been to on mm-hmm. periodontal disease? And we still will have those lectures, and I even give those lectures. Mm-hmm. But how do we make it applicable to the attendee, the person listening? So I went to get a master's degree because I said, I want to get paid to speak. And I do that professionally now. I'm a professionally paid speaker and entrepreneur, and I travel all over the globe, literally presenting and keynoting. And so that's how I got into it. I said, I want to do more with my clinical background. I want to do that. I want to get paid to speak. So therefore, I'm going to get a master's degree in communication mm-hmm. and adult education.
Ah.
So part of the 10 years I've done a lot after that, I mm-hmm. taught public speaking at the university for 4 years.
Very good.
So that was outside of dental hygiene, mm-hmm. but it was with my master's degree education. And then I worked for a dental manufacturing company, and I was the marketing and sales rep for my entire state.
Mm-hmm.
So I did sales and marketing. And within that, I did a lot of speaking to dental study clubs around the state and the region. So I just kept
building and growing. Yeah.
Yep. And I mean, all along the way, building my own business in the speaking world. So.
And what are some of those topics you're talking about these days?
Well, that's a great question, because I like to talk about only things that really I'm passionate about yeah. or that I care about. So I do a lot of speaking on women's health issues, okay. women throughout our lifetime. And I even wrote the book last year called Martinis and Menopause.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about one phase of a woman's life, right? But we all go through these same phases mm-hmm. as we age on the planet. So I talk a lot about women's health issues, not just oral health, but breast health, bone health, brain health. How do we live our best selves is always my tagline,
mm.
right? There's things that we need in our lives. We may need medications. You know, we may need chiropractic. We may need naturopath. We may need interventions medically. But there's so many things that we can do. Self-care, I call them self-care strategies.
Okay.
Because if we live our best selves, we're going to show up our best selves at work. We're going to show up as our best selves with our families,
mm-hmm.
Whatever it is. So.
And probably teach your patients how to be their best selves too.
Exactly. Right. Because as we know, when we're educating patients chairside, you know, it's trying to motivate them
right
to care about their own health.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can be creative, if we can ask them questions about what do they care about.
And I would imagine if you're on that journey and you can talk about some of the things that have worked for you or haven't worked for you, some trial and tribulations that you've gone through, I mean, that connection with the patient and having that conversation just matters more.
Sure. And I love to use, even when I'm in speaking from the podium, I like to use a lot of examples from my patients or, you know, because they teach you as well, right? So yeah, I think it's really important. I also think as healthcare providers, we are healthcare providers, we have to take care of ourselves, because I don't believe we can show up sick and in ill health and not be doing anything for our mental health, our physical health. How do we present ourselves to the world?
Mm-hmm.
How will my patient believe me, right? If I have bleeding gums, for example,
right,
if we're drilling right. it right down mm-hmm. to dental.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like, why would you trust a physical trainer if they were like obese and like eating donuts while they were training you? Like, it just doesn't work that way.
Right. That's exactly the principle. I feel like as healthcare providers, we need to be our best examples of who we are. And we're all different. And we all are given different genetics. So it's not about being the same size, shape, color, whatever. It's not that. Are you your best version of yourself?
Do you hear a similar message or concern or feedback from people, like, or hygienists as a whole, like maybe their lack of stretching or lack of water, lack of eating? Is there a common
lack of time to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, I mean, right. I know I've dehydrated myself most of my career because
right.
ain't nobody got time. We need to make the time, but you yeah. always feel like that, like, I'm running behind. I'll never be able to get it.
Yes.
Like a bathroom break.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's pretty indicative of our profession, because we are in the helping profession. We mm-hmm. are providing healthcare,
mm-hmm.
and most times when you're that type of person that wants to help others, in your very profession, you tend to put yourself second or last. I try to empower people to say, you must put yourself first. It's not selfish to make choices for yourself, because when you're at your best, then you can serve more. And that's my newest course. You talk about different things I talk about. I do. My newest course is about self-care strategies to slay that workplace burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the research says that as healthcare professionals, we are at a higher risk for burnout because it's a caring profession.
Mm-hmm.
Because we always, people come to us, they're sick. Usually. I mean, even the dental chair, you have your 6 month profies of the people who are healthy.
Right.
But a lot of our time and a lot of our profession is trying to help people understand you're in a disease state and here's how we can help that. You can help it. We can help it in the clinic. So yeah, I think as healthcare professionals, it really plays out and the data shows that as well.
Yeah, that's interesting that you bring that up, because I just got OSAP's Infection Control Journal and there's an article about burnout, which seems so outside of their normal, like, personal protective equipment and stuff. But they're really talking about burnout and how that's afflicting a lot of professionals and our patient care.
For sure. For sure. It really affects patient care because, you know, burnout is just this as a state that we're in where you're mentally and physically exhausted for a long period of time. And that's kind of the clinical definition of burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And when you are burnout, you're not getting enough sleep. You know, your brain is not firing as well as it can. You're not going to make as good decisions. Even in clinical care.
And critical thinking.
Yes,
and all of that.
All of that plays into it. So, yeah. And that's interesting what you say about the article, because my husband comes from the medical world,
mm-hmm.
a general surgeon. He just retired. And now we are seeing it in all of the medical journals as well about doctor burnout.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I would imagine, too, when you're burned out, you're not motivated. You're not motivated to take those CE classes. You're not motivated to read the journals. You're just kind of like, eh.
Mm-hmm.
You're just showing up and you get in that clock in, clock out world.
Yep.
And you're not taking care of yourself, not taking care of your patients.
Right. So when I talk to people and they're like, well, how am I supposed to get out of that state?
Good.
You know?
Yeah.
And when I do a workshop or a keynote, I talk about the self-care square, right? And it's physical wellness, mental wellness, nutrition, and sleep. And so when I talk to folks, it's like, if you can just tweak one thing in each of the squares, for instance, okay, you say you're burnout, you're tired, you feel like you don't have any time. Well, everyone can lace up a pair of sneakers and put 30 minutes on their clock on their phone and just walk around your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, if that's your level and that's all you've got the energy for, I guarantee you it will raise your mental health, because we know that as we move and walk, just physically, the endorphins raise in the brain, the feel-good serotonins, the dopamines. And so that's why as little as, you know, literally just walking for 30 minutes will help you get out of that burnout. Now, that's a start, right? That's
right.
I encourage people to take a look at what's in your kitchen. What are you eating? What are you putting in your body? You know, and I talk about supplementation and supplements that most all of us need for brain health. And that would be a lot of vitamin D, B complex, and omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
And most people do not get enough of that trifecta.
Yeah.
And if you can take that in, your brain fires better. You're going to feel better. You're going to have better feelings about getting out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
And going to work or whatever it is. So yeah, I try to really give a lot of whatever it is I'm talking about. I try to give my audience real practical tips they can take away right now,
mm-hmm.
whether it's for themselves or for their clinical practice.
And so why did you decide to write the book Martinis and Menopause? Like, what you said, that things that are really personal to you, that's like what you like to talk about. So tell us more about that.
Well, part of my journey even this last 10 years, and I'll touch on that, is during that time, I was on the board of the American Dental Hygienists Association.
Mm-hmm.
And then I rose up through the ranks and was the president of the ADHA in 2014-15.
Okay.
So that took a huge chunk of my time. And during two of those years, 2014-15, you know, I really was speaking for the association.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of put my speaking career on hold because I was speaking on behalf of the association. And I loved it. I loved every minute of it. But then when I was finished, it was like, okay, what's next in my life?
Mm-hmm.
And I have been a lifelong reader. my whole life. And I've always wanted to write a book. I thought, oh, if I could be an author and write a book, it would be a lifetime goal, a lifetime achievement. And so I decided, okay, well, now's the time because I'm kind of in a transition. So I took not quite a year, nearly a year to write the book. And how did I decide? That's a good question, because I was teaching on many different subjects within oral health, you know, including inflammation and whole health and periodontal disease. And I do a course on cannabis culture for healthcare professionals. And so I'm like, well, what am I going to write my book about? And I knew I'm not a fiction writer. Like, I don't write fiction. I don't have that skill set. But my favorite course to give at that time was my course on women's health, because I feel women are just dying for information about their own life and their own self. And so I thought, well, that's my favorite thing to talk about right now. I have a lot of research on it already because I do 4-hour classes on it. So I think I'm going to start there. And just as my own, when I was exercising, I walk in the park a lot around my house, and this Martini's menopause just came to me. It was like my creative idea. And I thought, oh, what a great idea. Because number one, people don't talk about menopause. In fact, they're like, what? Ew, why are you even saying that? And I'm like, well, I would like to reclaim that word. It's just a normal life cycle of a human being. So let's not be ashamed of the word. Let's not shy away.
Right.
And so I liked the title for that. And I also liked it because I love martinis. Like, that would be my drink of choice. And it's kind of a tongue in cheek. The martini, I do have martini and mocktini recipes in every chapter.
Mm. Yes, I saw those.
Yeah. They kind of go with the symptoms. Like, I tried to name them
like Zen martini or something.
Yeah,
like that.
The Zen Zone martini. Like, when you need to calm down. Yes. But the other thing about the martini to me is it's a metaphor for hanging out with people who love you and who get you. Mm. It doesn't matter what you're drinking, but it could be water. But the martini in my book really is that. Who are you hanging with? Are you hanging with people who love you, who are positive, who talk kindly to you? You know, and we don't really need to be hanging around with people who don't like us, who don't get us, and who constantly bring us down.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the martini is much bigger than just a drink. It's any drink. It's who are you drinking with?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's how I started to write the book. And I knew I wanted the chapters. I have 10 chapters, and I wanted to talk about the different systems and the different symptoms that women can go through with menopause.
So what would be some highlights from those chapters? Like, if you had to mentally go through, because I'm really interested in the menopause, because that's not a conversation. I mean, you look at their health history, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, obviously.
You're of a certain age.
Yes. And you've got some medications that are, and you're talking to me about your dry mouth and all those things. But do I actually talk to my, no, I don't think I've ever said, okay, so you're actively in menopause. Okay, great story. Like, you know.
Well, that's part of it.
Yeah.
Our mothers didn't talk about it. Our grandmothers didn't talk about it. I did not know any stories from my family history until I actually asked my mom point blank, how did you go through menopause? How was that for you? And you know, menopause, you go through this long, first you start reproductive zone. So, right, all of our younger listeners, from the time a woman starts her period, whatever age that is, 10, 12, 15, whatever it is, you start your reproductive zone, right? I mean, because you could have a child during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we all reach a transition, and some people call it perimenopause or premenopause, perimenopausal, or we'll just say we're menopausal, right? Like, we talk about it in lots of different ways, but that perimenopause is really 2 to 10 years it takes for your ovaries to shut down. That's what's happening. Your reproductive system is shutting down.
In 2 to 10 years.
Yes. It takes a while because you think of how many cycles your female body has gone through.
Yeah.
For wherever you started your period menstruation, then it's going to slow down. And so that's where some women will get erratic periods because you're not releasing an egg the same time every month, or you get the hot flashes because, well, that's one of the favorite things I do like to talk about, because 75% of women will suffer from hot flashes or night sweats. Mm. Just same thing. It's just day or night. You know?
Day.
Yeah. So I kind of digress, but
reproductive
zone, perimenopause, and then the medical definition of menopause is the day, one day in your life where you haven't had a period for 12 months.
Wait.
Right? Okay.
Hold on. It's the day that you do not have one.
Yeah. So you've gone 12 months with no period.
Ah.
Then medically, they say you have reached
day menopause. 366. Yeah. You're officially in menopause. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the definition, clinical definition. Ah. However, everybody's different, you know. And I went 15 months. I thought I was done. And I have a very funny story of, no, I was not. And then I went another 17 months and I thought I was done.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. Yeah, so, and then finally I was done.
And then you're just like, this ain't funny anymore.
No,
like,
right? Well, that's the thing. You're going to laugh or cry, right? So you might as well laugh. I mean, you might as well hang out with people who love you that you can laugh. You know, have
pour yourself a martini. ASAP.
Yeah. So that's the phases.
Okay.
Right? So I love just educating that because, like you say, we don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And until I really started researching it, I wasn't talking about that, or I didn't know these things either until I started researching and writing about it. So, but the interesting thing, I think, what tip like for the hot flashes, and the reason that happens is because way in deep in our brain, you know, we have our hypothalamus. Most dental hygienists will remember that.
Remember that, guy, yeah.
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 From head and neck anatomy. And, you know, that's like the thermostat of our body. Mm-hmm. It controls the temperature of our body. So as we're going through perimenopause and we're menopausal and our hormones are up and down and all over the place, our estrogens are surging or going away, waxing, waning, and then eventually they diminish, the estrogens. And our brain is full of estrogen receptors. Our body is full of estrogen receptors, even our mouth, which is an interesting chapter about oral health. And so when you don't have the estrogens that are filling the lock and key in the receptors as they should, your hypothalamus goes,
yeah,
I'm too hot. Your body thinks you're too hot, which is why you sweat, right? Because that's the body's way of cooling us down.
Okay.
So the hypothalamus gets out of whack, and that's why we have these hot flashes.
And you said 70% of women?
75%.
75% of women go through it. And what happens to 25%? Do they get anything? Nothing?
Oh, well, this is really interesting. The data shows us that about 30% of women go through all the way to menopause with hardly any symptoms at all.
Yeah.
They barely recognize. It doesn't affect their life. And then about 30% have symptoms, you know, two or more symptoms that disrupt their lives, whether it's becoming a raging witch in 60 seconds, you know, and just, you know, everyone's running and your family to get out of the mom's way, or, you know, or some women, their periods do get very out of control, or you can't sleep, you have the weight gain, severe weight gain. So there's a lot of, about 30% of us have some of those symptoms. And then about 30% of women, it's quite debilitating, right? Where for some reason, their bodies just have a much difficult...
More time going through it. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of theories about that, why... But I'll tell you, my book is full of...
All those things.
Of tips of how you can make it better for yourself.
Like looking at hot flashes. And
sure.
I worked with a receptionist one time and she was like a heater. And then all of a sudden that thing would come off and she'd grab something, she'd start her fan, and she'd just been like, yeah, okay.
You see it a lot in clinical and offices, because either the practitioner is of the age where she is prone to hot flash, or your patient is of an age. And think about what we do in clinical practice. When we are working on a patient, we literally are five inches our body from their body. It's very intimate what we do as dental hygienists. And when your body gets that close to someone else's body, you're going to cause a flash. Like if you are prone to flashing.
Almost because you're like radiating heat towards them.
Yeah, and you feel the other heat. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like if you suffer from the night sweats, which always was my symptom.
That's what you were afflicted with.
Oh yeah, like my husband could roll over and like his big toe could graze, barely touch an ankle. He's not touching me except his little toe maybe hit me as he's rolling over. And I'm telling you, within 2 minutes,
you're just like in a flash.
Oh, soaking wet.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah, they're so in the dental office. I said, yeah, of course. Have little fans clipped on your operatory. You know, have fans for your patients.
Okay. Be like one of those little handheld guys for the patient?
Yeah, like, or the clip-on kind, you know. It was very
ones
simple.
At the beach?
The little mister one.
I know, like the ones that you wear at the beach.
Yeah, the mists are great.
I'm like, give me a second. I'm going to wet you down with an ultrasonic in like 4 seconds. You're going to feel great after that.
Right. Well, and the funny thing is, like a tip for hot flashes, people who suffer from hot flashes, actually vigorous exercise lowers the intensity of hot flashes, which you think would be opposite.
Right.
Because vigorous exercise means you're exercising enough that you're sweating.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that is, walking, jogging, playing volleyball, whatever is your thing mm-hmm. that you like to do. What if you sweat, then that's considered vigorous.
Okay.
And so if you can do vigorous exercise 3 times a week or so, it will actually lower the intensity of the hot flashes.
What a good conversation to have with your patient, though.
Right?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But speaking of patients and oral health, with the woman who's going through some of these changes, the mouth can be very affected because there are estrogen receptors in our gingiva.
And is this also why puberty and pregnancy?
Exactly.
Okay. Right.
We're used to talking about it with puberty.
Mm-hmm. And pregnancy.
We're always talking about changes of the gingiva mm-hmm. and risk factors that you are higher risk for. And that's all hormonally driven. So it's the same as a menopausal woman. It's hormonally driven.
Okay.
It's just instead of all these, the surging of more hormone, for instance, in pregnancy, it's the waning and the leaving of the hormone. But yeah, the women are definitely a higher risk for geographic tongue.
Oh.
Burning mouth syndrome. They're at higher risk, of course, for periodontal disease because of the unique correlations between periodontal disease, stress, anxiety, and mm-hmm. cortisol levels.
Okay.
So periodontal disease is positively correlated with high cortisol and stress.
Okay.
And so many times women are, when you're in your 40s, 50s, you often are in a pretty stressful time of your life, whether your family's going through things, you may have smaller kids, you may have kids leaving the home, you may have parents you're taking care of, your significant other may be going through health or job employment issues. And so it pretty much it's a pretty high stress time in general mm-hmm. in a woman's life. So that stress, cortisol,
that's the trigger.
Yeah.
So if I can just make sure I understand this correctly. So with our puberty, our pregnancy patients, we tend to see more bleeding, more swelling, maybe even more like pseudo-pocketing mm-hmm. in their particular cases. And then as they start to progress into that perimenopause, menopausal, then we're looking at maybe more issues with perio. Is bleeding an issue as much with them?
It's not so much the bleeding. The research talks about it could be higher caries risk.
Oh, okay.
Because
the drier mouth.
The drier mouth, mm-hmm. yeah. The xerostomia leads to higher caries risk. And also, there's been really some interesting research done in the world of anthropology. So outside of our dental world, but anthropological studies looking at the lifetime, because anthropology looks at the lifetime of the human species. Mm-hmm. When comparing the male species to the female species, the data from that research tells us that a female is at greater risk for caries than a male through her lifetime. And there's a lot of different factors there. I don't really have time to get into, but it's a really interesting research because it's something we don't often hear in the oral health world.
And I would assume that the perio and the caries, all of that being that you're not sleeping well, you're not going into that stage 3, stage 4, your immune system's not really kicking in. It's just the cyclical issue. And like, I love the square concept that you were talking about, because if you aren't sleeping well, you aren't eating well, you aren't exercising. Right. Like, it really all does
tie in,
affect you.
And the other thing is oral health with our estrogens fading. And so we don't have as much estrogen. Well, estrogen also helps with bone and testosterone. And women do have testosterone, just not at the levels that men do. But as those go away, we are more at risk for bone health issues,
okay,
osteopenia, osteoporosis. And we do have data that shows if you have osteoporosis, you're like 4 times more likely to lose your teeth as you age, right? Mm. So that the alveolar bone is connected to the rest. You know, it's the same. It's bone.
And then we go on our bisphosphonates, and then that just sets us up for a whole other dental concern.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So whether it's the bisphosphonates or it's the aging in general, like some people have genetically weaker bones than others. And I like to put up a slide when I'm talking about that, where you can look at, you know, the x-rays, you're looking at the jaw, mm-hmm. right? And look at the thickness of the alveolar
like
bone.
Like that cortical bone
yeah.
there,
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because you can tell if there's a thinning jawline, right?
Like when you're doing a pan or something
mm-hmm.
like that?
Mm-hmm. Yep, pano. Mm-hmm. Hmm. It's really great because if you see that, you could alert your patient to say, hey, you know, have you ever had a bone test done? I mean, depending on how old they are. But,
right.
you know, as we get older, it's really important to have our bones
That's
tested.
A good argument for having a baseline when you are younger
yep.
and being able to compare that as you age.
Yep.
So another check or tally for x-rays.
Mm. Yeah.
Because they always want to fight you on that. I'm like, well,
right.
we can also take a look at bone levels as, mm-hmm. as you age, especially with our female patients. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes. And to see it throughout the lifetime would be very interesting. Yeah.
And so once a patient, they're in menopause, 360, mm-hmm. in theory, 366 days after like,
oh,
that last
post.
Year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're in that. So what does that set them up for as they become, like, what's the average age actually for that?
The average age in the United States is 51.8. 51 years old, about 52 years old.
And so does anything continue to change in that 50 to 60 to 70 to 80?
Yes. Yes.
Or do we have to be on the lookout for some additional
yes.
concerns?
That's why in our aging population, 50 and above, if you are through menopause, so we call it post-menopause, your estrogens will continue to lower as you age. And so it's helpful to have, I get tested every year. I'm post-menopausal. I get mm-hmm. tested every year for my hormonal levels
mm-hmm.
because I don't want them to drop to zero.
Mm.
Because estrogen yeah. is very protective. Estrogens protect us. Progesterone protects us. They protect our bone. They protect our organs. They protect our brain. And so as you age and have less and less of those hormones, then you are at greater risk. That's why one reason why the aging population has a greater risk for bone fracture, for example. We don't have the protective hormone levels anymore.
Do you recommend hormone replacement therapy?
Yes, I am a huge proponent of it. And, you know, there's two sides to that argument. I personally have been taking bioidentical hormones for over 10 years. I started when I was perimenopausal in that I was going crazy emotionally, having a hard time controlling my emotions. And I also had brain fog. That's another symptom. It's very real.
Mm-hmm.
The estrogens aren't fulfilling their receptors in the brain, and you actually forget what you're doing. You know, what kid am I picking up after school today?
So it's like pregnancy
it's not just
brain,
my
but
keys. Yes, it's the same type of thing. It's hormonally driven.
Yeah.
And it's real. Some women think they're going crazy because, you know, they've been, you know, feel like they're whip smart and on top of it all for so many years. And all of a sudden their brain is like mush, you know, it's like, well, no, it's transitional, thank goodness, but it is a very real thing.
Okay.
So when I started going through this, I started researching on my own self, like what is going on with my body? Okay, this is not me normal.
Yeah.
I like me normal. So what's going on? So that really started even before I even wrote a course, was my own research on what's happening to the female body.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, at that point, I started my early to mid 40s. I started taking bioidentical hormones. I found a nurse practitioner who specializes in women's health, and we test. And so I test every year.
So if somebody has maybe dropped with their hormones mm-hmm. and then we're seeing them as patients, they then get on a hormone therapy. Are there some things that we need to be on the lookout for orally?
That's a really good question. I haven't really looked at that, but I don't think it's not so blatant.
Okay. Yeah. And it's probably different in everybody.
And it's different for everyone.
Yeah.
And hormone replacement therapy is not to replace the level. Like, I'm never going to replace the levels of my 25-year-old self. That would be insane. Or even my 35 or 45-year-old yeah. self. No, no, no. The bioidentical hormones is to help you better ease in the transition, right? It's not to try to keep you 20 years younger. I mean, you know what I mean?
Right.
I know some people abuse, I think, hormone therapy with that, but I just want to live my best self.
Yeah.
And I want to feel good.
Yeah.
Because when I feel good, I'm better to my family. I'm better to my community. I'm better able to give.
Hmm. And I'm curious, and I mean, if you don't have an answer, because I'm probably asking some oddball questions, but I'm just curious. So, you know, you have like some patients and some people have a harder time in before maybe birth control, maybe in during their period, and then maybe they go on birth control and they're afflicted because mm-hmm. Lord knows I was a crazy person on certain ones. Mm-hmm. Is that like any, is that indicative of having issues later on?
Good question. There's no like direct research that says if you had a harder time in your reproductive zone world, you're going to have a harder time here. I have not come across any research.
I wonder if that's more anecdotal.
But lots of women who are in their perimenopausal years, they go on birth control for two reasons, because they're
irregular.
They're so irregular. Yeah. Or it actually has some validity to help with hot flashes.
Okay.
But that's a really personal decision.
Yeah.
And of course, a woman who is menstruating, even if it's once every 60, 90 days, you still could, you know, get pregnant. So
God
women
help.
Have to like, be, goodness, you have to be, you know, if you are a sexually active person yeah. during that time of your life, you want to, and you don't want to have children. Like I did not want to have children in my 40s. Thank you very much. You know, you have to be aware of that as well.
Yeah.
So, but you know what is, you know, birth control is basically hormones.
Yeah. Right.
So it's
that's
just
why I was kind of curious, like if you're going to get on that later on, are they similar hormones?
Well, they're estrogens, progesterones, and some testosterones as far as
whatever the, you're taking. Yeah.
But when you're taking like the bioidentical, not, I wasn't taking them for birth control.
Mm-hmm.
I was just taking them to level off my symptoms. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't being protected from pregnancy.
Right.
With them. So are they the same? I mean, they're the same as far right. as their hormones. They're the same hormones.
Gotcha.
But it's mm-hmm. going to be a much different levels.
Got it.
Mm. Yeah. And the bioidentical I like because that's where they test you and they make it for me. So my prescription will be different than yours and someone else's because it's what's my levels. So what do I need? Right. So that's why I continue to get tested. Whereas my mother's generation and our grandmother's generation, they had just one kind and everyone got the same prescription. And, you know, it was, who knows?
Some were good
that was.
And some were not.
Yeah.
So is there any other issues systemically that our patients could suffer from when they're in that minute? Like, I know with pregnancy, you might have more acid reflux or, you know, of course, weight gain, I would imagine is a pretty obvious one.
Yeah. Weight gain for many women is a problem
mm-hmm.
during this time of life, because again, not only are your estrogens going away, but you are also at a different age, right? So in my book, I talk about the weight gain and I come at it from a few different angles. And one of the angles that I totally relate to is, you know, you get a little older and you feel entitled. I'm entitled to sit here mm-hmm. and enjoy my shows tonight.
And my martinis.
Yeah, I'm entitled to my Netflix and this box of wine. And, oh, well, let's get the bag of chips while we're at it.
Yeah.
Right? Like we...
One more cookie tonight.
So I don't know how much of that is the hormonal, but it's definitely part of the aging, which plays into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've worked hard today.
Yeah.
Darn it. I'm going to have this or that.
I
right?
deserve it.
And we tend to be more sedentary as Americans anyway, you know, so all that leads into the weight gain. Also, I talk about in my book, the weight gain is, you know, what are our comfort foods, right? We all were raised, we all have different dishes or things that to us, when we're stressed or our emotional eating, it's going to be what we're going to eat,
mm-hmm.
right? And so trying to be aware of that, oh, this is emotional eating. And trying to pivot and make a more positive choice. You know, it's behavioral therapy. It's hard. But first of all, always just being aware.
Okay.
Always being aware is our first.
And again, we kind of keep circling back. And maybe this is, I'm learning more about airway and sleep deprivation. So that's probably why it's on my mind. But when you are sleep deprived.
Yes.
You tend to want to snack carbs more because that's energy. Then maybe the decay rate that like you have this cascading effect of issues that our patients are going to be suffering from.
Absolutely. And when you're not sleeping, you're not going to make, we won't put a blanket statement on it. It's very much more difficult to make positive choices for your eating, for your health, you know, for any of it. when you're tired.
And we can have, again, going back to that self-care that you'd like to talk about. And if I'm curious, do you work, because you work with multiple hygienists, right? We have, yes, Lacey here, our lovely admin here. How many of them are young and how many of them are maybe menopausal or menopause?
I think just a couple.
I'm just like the strife in an office amongst a lot of people in their different transitional phases. Mm-hmm. Do you talk about that much at all? I'm just curious because you know that AC, you've got a scaler getting down in there. If they've got a cage. Have you ever seen the cages on the ACs? And I've seen people put like scalers down the thing to like tip it down. I'm like, don't you dare.
Well, you know, I think I think you're not just talking about menopausal women.
Yeah, just men and women.
Yeah, I think you're talking about
office dynamics.
You know, do you respect yourself and do you respect the other people that you work with? And I think to rise up above that as much as we can. Yeah. Like going back to the negative, you don't always get to choose who you're working with, but you always get to choose what you will say or how you will respond to someone. I just think that's those are life skills, no matter what age you are, that are so important to learn. Because and if you're working in a place that is just untenable and just absolutely so negative, well, it's time to look somewhere else, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, I know office dynamics. You know,
they're intense sometimes.
They're intense. Yeah. And sometimes it's just you assume you know something about someone, but you're not correct. Right. Like I worked in an office once and the one of the dental assistants, she liked to stay late because she liked more hours before she clocked off. Right. So I would see her in the cleanup room and I thought she liked that because she got that extra 15, 20 minutes on her pay card.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would, at the end of the day, I usually would do all my instruments. At the end of the day, I would leave it for her thinking I'm doing her a favor I'm thinking she wants to have some more busy work to do before she clocks off. So I'm thinking I'm helping her, but she's thinking I'm being a witch, right? Because how
leaving
dare
it for
I
her.
Leave that for her? And I did not know it. Like for a month, I thought I was helping her until she kind of blew up at me. And okay, rightly so. And then I realized, oh my word, that was my bad. I assumed my bad, right?
Well, good communication so that you don't let that animosity kind of fester and
Right. Yeah.
You're lucky you only went a month like that because sometimes people go
years
longer.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think self-awareness is a big part of everything.
Yeah. Do you talk a little bit about that in your courses as well?
Yes, I do. Yes, particularly when I'm talking about mental health or mental wellness, I call it, because mental wellness is really, where are you in your brain state? And a lot of that is the self-awareness. How am I today? Mm-hmm. Am I angry today? Am I sad today? Am I irritated? And then why, right? And then we can put these practices into place. Like I'm a big believer in meditation, big believer in positive affirmations, speaking positively to yourself to get yourself into a better mental state. Like I have a practice I talk about, and I've had to train myself in this before I get out of bed in the morning. Like, you know how you wake up and you're not really awake, but either the alarm wakes you up or you know you've got to get out of bed. And over the years, I've trained myself to, before I get up, before my feet hit the floor, I'm thinking, thank you for today. Thank you for today. Whatever your belief system is, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm saying thank you. I'm putting gratitude out into the universe. I'm not even really awake yet. But I'm saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for today. And so by the time I put my feet on the floor, I've already put my brain in a more positive state. And it's training. You're training yourself to be that way, to be in, have a more positive outlook. So I do a similar thing when I go to sleep. I talk about sleep hygiene.
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I talk about, because sleep is a big issue, particularly with women up this certain age. And part of it is, what is your sleep hygiene routine? You know how when you have babies or toddlers, little kids, we get them ready for sleep, right? Maybe we give them a warm bath. We put cozy jammies on them. Maybe we rub good smelling talcum powder or a lotion on them. We put them in their bed. We make it cuddly. We dim the light. Yeah. Maybe we read them a story. Maybe we rub their back. And all of those practices, we are telling that little baby, that little toddler, it's time to go to sleep. brain and body, it's time to go to sleep. And I say, as adults, we need to treat ourselves like those little babies. Mm-hmm. Like, what is your hygiene routine? Sleep hygiene routine. Like, and I travel so much. I do the routine everywhere, in my hotel room or my own home, right? Like, do you hopefully clean your mouth every night, you know, whether you're brushing, you're flossing, you're rinsing, whatever your routine is. You're putting in your retainers or your bite block or whatever it is. You know, if you clean your face,
mm-hmm.
it's the same routine every night, right? Hopefully you put on, when you take off your daytime clothes, you put on something that feels comfortable to you. It's all going to be different for each of us. Mm-hmm. But all of those little steps, we are telling our brain, okay, we're getting ready to go to sleep.
Mm.
And then for me, I no screens in my bedroom.
That's a hard one too. And that's it's a common one.
Very common. And if you share a bedroom with somebody, they may not be on board with you. But in my own bedroom, I have no TV on and I don't go to sleep with TV on.
Because
the light, flickering light, whether it's TV, iPad, iPhone, you know, is telling, going through our eye into the pineal gland, another gland in the brain, telling us to stay awake. It's jarring us over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And then our body cannot make its own melatonin. And the pineal gland makes that. And you need that to go to sleep. So screen time, could you do 30 minutes no screen time before bed? You know, I say just start with that.
Start with something.
Start with that. You know, my phone goes in the other room at night and I turn it. No one can call. Well, my mother and my children could reach.
Yeah, you can hear it. Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't hear anything. I don't want to hear a text coming through. Oh, my. Right. That makes me so mad when I'm trying to fall asleep and ding, hear the text come.
Yep.
So and then the lights. You have to sleep in darkness. It has to be dark. I sleep with
eye masks everywhere.
I love my eye masks. And of course, I do like to read.
Yeah.
But before I read, I have a whole sleep hygiene routine where I go through the day mentally and anything in my day that did not go well or as well as I wanted it to, or perhaps I said something not unkind to someone, or perhaps someone hurt my feelings, or perhaps I was in traffic and I became, you know, road raged. Whatever the negative was of the day, I give that up. Give up the negative. Play out how it could have gone better. And then I have to forgive myself and
let it go.
Whoever I'm dealing with. Let that go. Exactly. And then I think about all the good things of the day. So I'm ending my night as I'm getting ready to sleep on what was good about today. Today, I got to do this wonderful podcast, right? It's been really fun. It's a great memory as I'll lay in bed tonight and I'll think about today, this time. So then I give gratitude again to the universe. Thank you. Thank you for all these good things of the day. And then the finally thing I do is I look for tomorrow. I say, what do I have to do tomorrow? What's on my calendar? What's tomorrow going to be like? And then I play out how I want tomorrow to be. Like if I'm giving a talk, right? It's like I picture myself really connecting to the audience and really giving them some incredible information. And I picture that. I picture that energy flow that I want to happen. So then I pick up my book and can go to sleep. So I think sleep hygiene is really important. And I do a whole workshop on it.
So let's talk more about your workshops. Like, where can people find you? Like, do you have a website?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. My website is my name, kellyjakes.com. So that's KellyJakes. It's spelled differently.
All the vowels.
Yeah. KellyJakes.com. And on there, if you would like, I give, if you put give me their name and email, I put you on my blog list because I send out a health and wellness blog about twice a month.
Oh, perfect.
To email. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so sometimes it's a video blog, but I'm always trying to give self-care strategies on how we're going to live our best self and whatever the topic is I'm talking on. So when people sign up for that, they get a free PDF of like top 10 stress busters of the busy professional. Yeah. So my website, you can email me from my website. You can call me from my website. You can fill out a little form of you want me to get a hold of you. So that's really the best way is at kellyjakes.com. And my email is kelly@kellyjakes.com.
And I'm assuming they can buy your book from there as well.
Yes, there's a link on there to buy the book, Martinis and Menopause. Also, it's directly on Amazon as well. Yeah, I was really happy. It became an Amazon bestseller the first month it was out. So that was really exciting for me. And later this summer, I have written a companion workbook to the book. So you can actually go through the chapters and I have in the workbook, I have places you can journal. I have games you can do. I have kind of like assignments in a way, like go through your kitchen cupboards. What's five things you could get rid of?
That's nice.
What's five things you could buy at the store this week that's going to make you have a healthier kitchen?
Mm.
So I have activities.
Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some accountability.
Well, yeah. And I think it's fun too. Yeah. Yeah. What if you had a book club or something and could do it together? It would be really fun.
That would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
So head over to your website. Definitely buy your book. Definitely get this work. When's the workbook you said coming out?
Well, it's in print right now.
Oh,
I'm waiting for them to say they're done.
Exciting.
Should be within the next 6 weeks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then definitely people can hire you and come speak for
That's
events.
What I love. Yep.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Professional speaker, and get a hold of me through my website. And then we talk times. We talk topic.
Yeah.
I like to customize my topics for whatever.
So and all those are listed on your website?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yep. Yep.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for coming on.
I loved it. We've
done a lot
the world in
as
this
per
time.
The huge on this podcast.
Yeah,
like we
great.
Have this one topic and then it just like.
I appreciate it. It's been really fun.
Deviates. Yeah, this
being
is great.
On the podcast today.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad we got it finally worked out. It took us a year.
One, if not longer than that. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.
We forgot to mention that Lacey was a part of that.
Yes, episode.
Interview. So
mm-hmm. Thank you, Lacey,
thanks,
always.
Lacey.
And she's also the one bringing you guys amazing CE stuff on the back end. So we appreciate her so much. I want to also do a shout out to my wonderful little nose filters.
Yes.
That you just saw over here on the floor. People think I'm a crazy person when I talk about these nose filters, but I forgot them on the flight here. I left them in my check bags. I'm so angry at myself. I was so congested on the way here. If you fly a lot and you got a lot of allergies, check out o2nosefilters.com. Well, we also want to thank PDT always for their CE. They are the ones that are sponsoring the CE portion that so you can go and take the test for a lot of these podcasts that you're getting. So find it in the show notes. They're great human beings. They make great instruments and they're just highly supportive as a company. And we love them so
and
much.
We have an episode coming out soon when they let us commandeer most of their
booth
space.
Yep.
And so thank you very much for letting us do that. That's really cool of them. Also, we're at ADHA.
And you and I are now going to be going to ADA San Fran.
Yes, we are. That's the next step. So if you guys are going to be in San Francisco area at that time, that would be really fun to meet up. We have actually our schedule is relatively, I think this is going to be one of the freer ones that we have compared to some of the other.
I thought we were pretty free at this one.
We did a lot of courses this time.
Yeah. It's so rare that we do that.
But I mean, let us know and we will try and schedule something. So I think we just have a few meetings that we're going to be doing and yeah.
I think that, yeah, we would love to see you. It's a big meeting because it's a three association coming together. So American Dental, the world, like the Federation, World Federation Dental, and I don't know, FDI, whatever that stands for. And then CDA, California Dental Association North, coming together. So it's a really big meeting. I hope to see a lot of our friends and come and say hi to us if you're there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you have any questions, find us on Instagram and also Facebook. And you can send us a message at atale2hygienist@gmail.com. Or if it's me or Andrew that you want to chat with, it's Michelle at atale2hygienist.com and Andrew at atale2hygienist.com. We're also on LinkedIn. You can share our stuff there. And we would love and appreciate you if, one, you share these podcasts, even on social media. Tell people, you know, we have thousands of listeners, but there's 180 plus thousand dental hygienists that need to hear this information. So we would very much appreciate that if you loved an episode to spread the word, tell your friends and teach them how to download a podcast if they don't know how to do that either.
Yes, please do that. That'd be
and
really
then
nice.
Find us on iTunes and rate us and review us. And come find us and give us a hug. Andrew loves hugs.
I do love hugs. Mm-hmm. I've been a hugging machine here.
I love hugs from anyone but Andrew.
Shut your face. You're the worst.
All right, y'all. Have a great week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, y'all.